What is happening, everyone? How is it going? And happy Halloween! Welcome back to this special Halloween edition of Yes, Bro. Are you guys ready? Because this episode is going to be real fucking spooky. And even if you're listening to this episode after Halloween, it's, you know what? It's always spooky season. Tis the season to be spooky. All right, guys, before we begin, I want to start by thanking all of you for listening. It means the world to me that you continue to tune in episode after episode. Or if you're listening for the first time, thanks for tuning in. But also, where the fuck have you been? As always, I have to thank the generous donors to the Yes, Bro cause, because without you, this podcast would still be possible, but you make it that much better and that much worthwhile. So thank you for your contribution. But enough about that. Let's begin. Hold up. Let me set the mood. Let me take a sip of my drink really quickly. Oh my God, guys. Can we talk about my Halloween costume and how I don't fucking have one yet? So this year, I felt so uninspired to dress up, and I'm disappointed in myself, really. Every year for the past 4 years, my costume has been inspired by something relevant to pop culture of that year. This year, I honestly don't feel like there's been anything really impactful culturally that I can say. I mean, yeah, like stupid things like at the Met Gala, like everyone's going to dress up as Kim Kardashian this year, big fucking deal. But if you know me, you know my brand, you know that I don't like doing what everyone else is fucking doing. And honestly, there hasn't really been anything that has made me say, oh my gosh, it's so worth me taking 50 trips to Michael's, Joann's Fabrics, and Hobby Lobby to find the right materials. And because I've set the bar so high for myself over these past few years, I'm so against going to the store and buying a costume. Like, I can't bring myself to do that anymore. It's not me being a snob. It's just me knowing that I can put a bomb-ass costume together that no one else will fucking have. I hate seeing bitches wearing my shit. See, in the past, I've dressed up as Miley Cyrus on the cover of her Younger Now album, Beyonce at Coachella, Rosalía in the Con Altura video, and last year I did Lady Gaga in the Rain on Me music video. I've handcrafted every single one of these costumes, shopped for the accessories, trained myself to walk in heels, shaved my beard, my ass. I've literally gone all out each Halloween. And this year, I was even thinking, maybe go back to the basics or the classics and dress up as a cartoon or something. But like I said, I'm not feeling it this year. And I know that I've let a bunch of people down because a lot of y'all look forward to my costumes and the production that follows. But it's not happening. Or who knows, maybe I'll pull something out of my ass at the last minute. And as with every Halloween season, I always look forward to watching like the latest scary movies and whatnot. But I sometimes sit through like these trailers. And I'm like, or I'll sit through like the first 5, 10, 15 minutes of the fucking movie. And then I'm like, this shit's awful. Like, I'm not about to sit here and waste my time, even if I'm not even glued to the screen. And actually, no, the last scary movie that I watched was Midsommar. And what freaked me out about it was that it almost felt like one of those dreams that you can't escape. It was so realistic. And the fact that this movie features people being themselves and following traditions that have been passed down for centuries, like people getting high as shit and feeling vulnerable and then getting eaten, like, it's all totally believable. Like, I remember when I would watch a ghost movie or something with a killer like Michael Myers or whoever, and I'd be creeped the fuck out. And of course, my imagination doesn't run as wild as it did when I was a kid. Like, right now, I can watch a movie about, like, a demonic possession or a serial killer that doesn't fucking die, and I'll literally fall asleep. And you know what? I'm actually kind of pissed because I realized that there aren't any characters in major horror flicks that are gay. And it's actually kind of rude. But what I discovered in doing some research for topics for this episode of Yes, Bro, left me shook. And you're about to find out why. You like that shit, right? Super spooky, I know. Just me trying to set the tone. Anyway, so Halloween and horror are synonymous. They're filled with all kinds of chilling themes and traditions, of course. Some of these themes were born from the imaginations of people, old folklore, or sometimes even inspired by true events. The fun thing about these true events is that most of the time they're inspired by a subtle detail, an artifact, or a piece of evidence that was part of the original story, and then boom, an entire series of fucking horror films. Like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, for example, which, although was inspired by a true story, the storyline is nothing close to the original tale. Matter of fact, the true story is just as chilling and deserves its own movie, if you ask me. So I'll bet right now I have you wondering, how much of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre story is actually true? The 1974 version and the 2003 versions of the film are slightly based on what really happened, FYI. Leatherface, the main character, was inspired by real-life serial murderer Ed Gein, and he was suspected to have taken the lives of several victims between the years of 1954 and 1957. But here's the thing. Ed and his family didn't eat people, nor did they chase anyone around with a chainsaw. The only real correlation between the film and what happened in real life are you ready for this? The house and everything that was found within. So yeah, all the gruesome gore stuff, body parts, people skinned and torn apart. Yeah, all that was real. Oh, and so was the fact that he wore other people's faces and skin. But get this, he only did this to fulfill his desire to become a woman.
She's an icon, she's a legend, and she is the moment.
Okay, let's get one thing straight. I'm not here to glorify a murderer. So before any of you think that, like, chill the fuck out. Bottom line, he wanted to be a woman so bad that not only did he wear the faces of his female victims, but he also made a vest with their breasts attached and would wear their privates over his.
But you're not a pretty girl!
It's terrifying, right? But don't worry, he did not use a chainsaw. In fact, two of his identified victims were killed with a shot from a pistol. But when searching his house and the property, police found one of his victims hanging, gutted like a deer, with her head completely removed. No idea what was used to do this, but it wasn't a chainsaw. Maybe it was like a butter knife or a pizza cutter, I don't fucking know. But imagine, he lived in the middle of nowhere, he didn't have the resources, but he sure as hell had the fucking time to slice away at them. Anyway, the element of the chainsaw was added for the film's story, obviously, to make it scarier, because what can be scarier than a man wearing a woman's face and severed tits chasing you with a chainsaw around his ugly house in the middle of nowhere? Like, come on. Also, this didn't even happen in Texas. It happened in boring old Plainfield, Wisconsin. Like, ew. But the backstory of Ed Gein is both creepy and sad. See, he was a shy kid and was very attached to his mom. He was technically a mama's boy. His mom was super religious and would tell him not to make any friends and to avoid loose women because they were dangerous. She was basically trying to keep him from going to hell. So stupid. Also, his father was an alcoholic. So naturally, mama picked up her two boys and left to middle of nowhere Plainfield, Wisconsin, where other kids at school apparently saw him as a quiet and feminine boy. We can already imagine they bullied the shit out of him. Anyway, he worshipped his mom, so he didn't like when his brother criticized her. This is where Ed's childhood gets kind of juicy. So one day, a fire broke out near their home where Ed and his brother went separate ways to extinguish it. After the fire was put out, Ed apparently was freaking out because he couldn't find his brother. Then when police arrived, somehow, Ed was able to lead them directly to his brother's dead body, which was found in an area untouched by the fire, with bruises on his head.
That's suspicious.
The coroner later revealed that asphyxiation was the cause of death. And since Ed was so shy and vulnerable and innocent, he was ruled out as a suspect. Guys, it was the 1940s, it was a different world, and DNA being used for evidence didn't really become a thing until several decades later. So that's the real story behind Leatherface. Now you know that Ed Gein was a real-life body snatcher and murderer. He's also known as the grandfather of gore, like out of all fucking tacky names. But from what I just shared with you, do you see what I mean when I say there should be a movie based on his real life? But it's crazy though how a chainsaw has become a symbol of terror just because of this film franchise that is based on the life of a serial murderer that didn't even use a chainsaw to begin with. Like, that's so crazy. But look at us now. Thanks to this series of films, we can't walk into a haunted house without hearing a chainsaw and shitting ourselves. And if I may add, I find it extremely homophobic that no one, and I mean no one, talks about Leatherface's trans aspirations. Listen, movie after movie, they've managed to deform him. They made him inbred, gave him a creepy family. But no one talks about how he may have been bullied by his classmates, traumatized by his upbringing and having an alcoholic father and a religious mother that did nothing but instill fear and hate for the world. You know, if we can have movies like Maleficent and Cruella where we get to understand why these characters are so fucked up, we should have one for Leatherface. I'm just saying. Now, I'm not sitting here glorifying the fucked up shit that he did because it's all fucking wrong. But it's time that we see Leatherface for the queer icon he could have been. Oh my god, I think I have a Halloween costume. So that's that on Leatherface and the Chainsaw Massacre. Well, the Wisconsin Chainsaw Massacre. The fucking massacre that happened in the middle of nowhere. Hope y'all enjoyed that because there's plenty more where that came from. Wait, let's set the mood again. For centuries, we've been taught to fear vampires. In recent times, thanks to the media, we've been taught to have passionate vampire sex with them. I don't get it. Listen, I'm not into biting or anything rough play. Oh my god, this one guy that I was like messing around with like ages ago, he left my neck covered in fucking hickeys and I felt like fucking trash.
Just as I thought. Trash.
So vampire sex is a no for me. Y'all enjoy that journey. But the story of vampires is layered, and I'm not about to get into all that because vampires have a rich history in the world of folklore, as do many creatures we know and fear today. So I'll be keeping this one super short. Okay, so are y'all familiar with the disease tuberculosis? Symptoms are usually cough, sometimes with blood, weight loss, night sweats, and fever, and all this other stuff until you die. Well, once upon a time in 1800s New England, tuberculosis was the leading cause of death. Before the knowledge of germs came into play, many people believed that the people who died from tuberculosis would come back to life as a vampire and prey upon their families, thus passing on the virus. Fucking morons. Anyway, tuberculosis took the lives of 2% of New Englanders between 1786 and 1800. So a lot of people were dying, and fast. Because the people were so freaked out and had no solution to keep tuberculosis from spreading, citizens would literally dig up buried bodies and perform various rituals, like the burning of organs, for example. This was all in an effort to keep vampires from coming back and sucking the life out of their loved ones. There was, however, one exhumation that took place and left the 19th century townspeople shooketh. A mother and her two daughters were unearthed. When opening the casket of the mother and one of the daughters, they found two rotted corpses, as expected. However, the daughter who died most recently, her body was found to be completely preserved, despite having been buried for several months. They also found that her hair and nails had grown, but it was revealed that she was getting ready for a trip to Miami, hence the nails and extensions she had put in.
Period.
Kidding, but her hair and nails did grow. And when they went to pierce her skin, she bled. To the villagers, these were all signs that homegirl was in fact a vampire. A doctor came to inspect what was happening, and he was all like, it's cold, we're in the Northeast, her body was just preserved, y'all need to relax. And of course, the townspeople didn't fucking listen. So they went ahead, carved her heart out, and burned it on a nearby rock, and her husband, who was alive but ill with tuberculosis also, was to consume the ashes, which apparently was supposed to keep him from dying, as a kind of weird vaccination method, I guess. Lo and behold, he died anyway. It's believed that this practice of exhuming the dead and performing these kinds of rituals were brought over by traveling healers from Eastern Europe. This ritual eventually stopped, and people started listening and believing in the sciences, something we still struggle with to this day. Anyway, writer Bram Stoker published his novel Dracula in 1897, where he described the vampire character as a spectral being or ghost possessing a human body, who left the grave at night to suck the blood from the living. Him releasing his novel during this time was a savage move. Homeboy was basically capitalizing on the fears of New Englanders by exaggerating and transforming the vampire fears into a fantasy, which is something we've seen many times throughout history. Anyway, are y'all ready for more? Because I've got a couple more left in me. This one has to be my fave. Let me set the mood again. And you know what? Before I continue, I just have to say, I hope you guys are understanding that people have reacted to certain things through the years based on their knowledge of the world around them. When you revisit a lot of this spooky folklore and their origins, it can all still be pretty frightening, though. And that's why, like, I like sharing this shit with you. Anyway, when we think of witches, we either think of some ugly hag with green skin, long, crooked noses, and fingers covered in warts, or some hot bitch that carries around a book of spells. No matter what version of witches we think of, it's common for the broom to also pop up into our thoughts. But where did all this imagery of witches come from? Look, I don't have all the answers, but after conducting my research, I was able to draw a few conclusions. Okay, so a little backstory. Witches have been part of history for, like, centuries. In the early beginnings, they were seen as healers because they experimented with herbs and all kinds of shit to make medicines or potions to cure and treat certain illnesses. People would also tap into the power of certain witches to control things like the weather or to keep crops from dying. But at some point, something changed.
People began seeing witches as less than human beings. Devious women who danced with the devil. Okay, guys, you guys aren't even taking me seriously anymore with these fucking sound clips that I decided to inject into my fucking script over here. And if you're enjoying them, then yay. So, yeah, people saw them as less than human beings. And when it was convenient, people would blame literally everything that went wrong in the town or village on witches, or would accuse the bitch everyone hated on for being a witch. And because people thought so poorly of them to begin with, people would believe it. See the Salem witch trials, for example. But anyway, the broom. So the association between witches and brooms may have roots in a pagan fertility ritual, in which rural farmers would leap and dance astride poles, pitchforks, or sometimes even brooms in the light of the full moon to encourage the growth of their crops. This broomstick dance became confused with common accounts of witches flying through the night on their way to orgies and other illicit meetings. Oh my god, isn't that hot? So yes, you heard right. Witches would go to orgies. In fact, they loved their orgies. Like, they were pretty fucking lit. And this is where I say, like, gays and witches have a lot in common, by the way. So you know how I mentioned that little broomstick dance? Well, a witch's broom apparently was lubed up with a special potion that would cause euphoria and would heighten the female sexual experience. Author Michael Pollan gives perhaps the most detailed description of the alleged sexual connection between witches and their brooms in his book, The Botany of Desire, A Plant's Eye View of the World. As he tells it, midwives, herbalists, and ladies in the know, aka witches, that was their code name, ladies in the know, would cultivate psychoactive agents using datura, opium poppies, belladonna, hashish, and even skin toads with trace levels of the hallucinogen DMT. These ingredients would be combined in a hemp seed oil-based flying ointment, that's in air quotes, that witches would then administer vaginally using a special dildo. He writes, this was the broomstick by which these women were said to travel. Other sources, including historian William M. Bowden, confirmed that this type of hallucinogen would best be absorbed into the body through a mucous membrane, like the vagina, for example, further explaining why the traditional image of the witch would depict her riding an ointment-coated broomstick. Oh my god, it's all making sense right now. So typically, if you were a witch, you would check your broomstick for splinters, number one, because ow, who wants a splintered twat? You'd lube it up with your special sauce, and then you'd pleasure yourself on it while riding it through the night. Isn't that lovely? So if you see a witch flying on her broom laughing, you know her pussy is lost in the sauce. Let her fucking live. Oh my god, which reminds me. So back when Harry Potter was the coolest thing to dress up as, I remember there was this broom that was sold separately, and when you would press a magic little button, it would start vibrating. Like, ooh. And if you're serious about being an authentic witch this Halloween, then you need this fucking broom. Just lube up that Nimbus 2000 or that Firebolt and get ready for the ride of your fucking life, witches. I'm pretty sure you can find it at a Spirit Halloween near you. Anyway, another fun fact. So back when the Americas were being invaded and colonized, broom makers would engrave the handles of brooms with a cross so that women would know that this broom is holy and not meant for buffing your muffin, which is fucking terrible. Like, could you imagine you're there horny, lusting for Jebediah or whoever, and you can't smash because you're not married? Otherwise, you'd be ostracized by your entire village and your only other option is the broom you're supposed to use to sweep, but you can't because your broom is holy or whatever? Jebediah, where you at? Anyway, what I drew from this was female sexuality has been demonized for centuries. Matter of fact, to this day, it's still seen under the same light. Hell, any kind of sexual act that is in between a married man and a woman with the intention to procreate is seen as an act of the devil or whatever. I don't fucking know. To make matters worse, you have all these men out here getting theirs, but doing the least to please their women. Mm-mm. But how fucked up is it that society tricked women into believing that self-pleasure and enjoying sex made you ugly and demonic? That's so fucking rude. Like, oh, you're a pleasure seeker? That makes you a witch. Fuck off. Like, I remember being told as a boy and hearing everywhere that masturbating would make you grow hair on your hands or make your hands extra clammy or would blur your vision. Like, why are people so fucking anti-shit? But anyway, I want to know who the little twat was back then that said women being pleasured is scary. Like, unless the woman he was having sex with was making frightening climax sounds. Like, I don't know.
then okay, maybe I guess I'd be terrified too. Or oh my god, she probably squirted and he got grossed out by it. I don't know. Or maybe he was consumed by a terrible case of post-nut guilt. Who knows? Anyway, to learn more about the truth behind witches, I highly encourage you to do your own research because this shit is so interesting. But before we end this stream of storytelling, I have one more. So we joke about our candy being tampered with when trick-or-treating and how parents need to check their kids' candy or else they'll find Lord knows what. Rumors of tainted or poisoned candy handed out to children while trick-or-treating have been part of Halloween tradition for like the longest. But seriously, like how big of a threat is it? Or is it just an urban legend? So apparently criminal justice experts claim that this crime is greatly exaggerated, where most of the cases they analyzed were either overstated or could not be linked to Halloween. But see, here's the thing. Paranoia about tainted candy spiked in the early 1980s after a batch of Tylenol pills at a store were poisoned. Since then, what has happened? Childproof containers and tough federal laws have been created and all this other good shit to keep us all safe from harmful Tylenols. However, after the Tylenol murders, because actually people did die, warnings about tampered Halloween candy increased for some weird reason. And even before that, in 1964, a New York woman named Helen File was arrested for handing out things like ant poison and dog biscuits to kids. When questioned, though, homegirl was all like, oh, it's just a joke. I only gave that to the kids I felt were too old to be trick-or-treating. See, this is the fucking reason to not let your kids go trick-or-treating by themselves, because of stupid cunts like this. Thankfully, no kids were poisoned, and when they came knocking on her door, she was like, oh no, it's not again. Although it wasn't taken lightly. But that's such a New Yorker thing to do, you know? However, the most famous Halloween poisoning took place on October 31st, 1974. That's when a Texas man gave cyanide-laced pixie sticks to 5 children, including his son. The other children never ate the candy, thankfully, but his 8-year-old son did, and died shortly after. Had to be fucking Texas. Although nobody saw this man put the cyanide in the candy, investigators learned that this man had recently taken life insurance policies out on his children.
Nobody's gonna know.
They're gonna know.
I can't. I need help. Anyway, he was convicted of murder and was executed via lethal injection in 1984. So bye. See, and here's the thing. This man came damn near close to killing Halloween. But the only thing he killed was his future. And see, it's because of instances like this that parents have been paranoid for decades. And in addition to this, so many rumors of razor blades and apples, drugs being passed out instead of candy have surfaced. Like, honestly, who's passing out drugs for free? Like, I want to know. I really want to know. Like, what proof did our parents have to fill our heads with all this fear after all of these years? And it's not that I do drugs, but I know that they're not fucking cheap. I mean, as is this year, I can't afford to be buying name brand candy from the store. So children, you're going to be getting knockoff candy from Aldi. You're going to be getting Frittles instead of Skittles. Ooh, ah, the ghetto. But all jokes aside, like I mentioned earlier, this was during a time when it was so easy to tamper with everything. Since then, pharmaceutical companies have improved their packaging to be tamper-proof, and so have candy manufacturers. But you know what needs to be tamper-proof? Ice cream. I'm still so fucking mad at those asshole kids that would go around licking ice cream and putting it back in the freezer for clout on social media. Anyway. Yeah, so candy, medicine, and everything in between has become more tamper-proof, blah, 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 blah. Either way, check your kids' candy because you don't know what you'll find. Like, what if it's expired? What if the candy hasn't been stowed away properly and it's covered in, like, dirt or, like, shit or I don't know. Anyway, that concludes story time. Keep on fucking listening because this episode isn't over yet. We've got some chilling stories from our listeners and I can't wait to share with you. It's happened to all of us at some point. We meet a cute somebody online, you exchange a few words until one of you decides to take your interactions a step further. You agree to meet in person, at a bar, restaurant, the parking lot of the abandoned Taco Bell. Yeah, everyone's gone on a date that's gone horribly wrong. Sometimes the date was doomed from the beginning, but we make an appearance anyway in the hopes that, you know, we're gonna have a good time. I took to Instagram and asked y'all to share some of your worst date experiences. I'll be honest, I expected worse. So lucky for all of you listeners, none of these stories will keep you up at night. Anyway, let's call this segment My Date from Hell. But before I share everyone's stories, I'll start with mine. Ages ago, I was on this lovely application called Scruff. I met this strapping young lad who unlocked his pictures, and I was like, oh wow, he's handsome. So we agreed to meet at a fine Italian dining spot called Carrabba's. We had an excellent time. We chatted about musicals and movies and all kinds of good shit. Then we sat in the car and we made out. It was great. We agreed to meet for a second date. And so we did. This time in a bar setting with his friends. We continued to have a good time in the company of his friends. We were laughing. Ordering drinks left and right. I got fucking wasted. I didn't even know what time it was when I had said I was ready to go. So we left. I hopped in his car and we took off. Not the safest thing to do, right? But he insisted he was fine. He was fine. He was fine. At one point, all I remember is saying, I want fries. I want fries. I want fries. I'm pretty sure we decided we were going to make it to an IHOP or Denny's. I remember holding his hand and slowly opening my eyes and him saying, don't panic. It was at that moment when he said, don't panic. And I saw the red and blue lights flashing behind us that I was like, oh, fuck. Shit. Cop goes, license and registration. Homeboy hands it over. Cop comes back. It was at this moment that homeboy starts freaking out. Fuck, fuck, fuck. What happened? I ask him. My driver's license is expired. And I go, oh, fuck. And he goes, and so is my tag. Can't make this shit up. They arrested homeboy and left my ass behind, throwing up on the side of the car. I had to call his friends through his phone that was dying, I think, and have them come pick me up and drive me home because I was in no way, shape, or form able to sit behind the wheel and drive my ass home. Mind you, I was all the way like 30 minutes driving distance away from home. So there I was, sitting in the back of his friend's car, throwing up into a plastic shopping bag. I hadn't heard from him all day the following day because he was obviously in jail. But it wasn't until late in the evening when he finally reached out. Hey, I'm home. And I felt so bad. So you know what my dumbass did? I drove all the way down south to go see him. I maybe saw him a couple of times after that, but I knew it wasn't going to work out. Anyway, that's my story. Now, the stories that some of y'all wrote to me, they range from what the fuck to disgusting to just like, oh, hell no, to just like weird. Someone wrote in saying there was this guy who liked me and his name was Richard. And one time I was out and gave him my number, but I really wasn't interested in him. I also had another friend named Richard who happened to get a new number. A couple of weeks later, I get a text from Richard asking me if I wanted to grab some food and drink. So I'm like, okay, sis, let's go. We planned it for a whole week because our schedules were so bad. I show up to the restaurant thinking I'm going to grab some food with my friend and it's the other Richard. I straight up walk past him in the parking lot because I was thinking I was meeting up with my friend. Someone else wrote in saying, okay, so back when I was single and living in New Jersey, I was on Tinder. I matched with this super cute guy who had super cute dog on his profile. We talked for a few days and everything was great. He had a producing job out there and his own place in the Bronx. Red flag. Well, we decided to go on a date to a little Thai place in Manhattan and everything actually went super well. I left, went back home, and he was already talking about a second date. He started asking me if I knew how to cook because he wanted me to come over his house all the way in the fucking Bronx from New Jersey and cook a meal for him. I was like, well, you live kind of far as fuck from me, and I think maybe we should get to know each other a little more. And he says, I kid you not, don't worry. You can just come over. And if you get too drunk, you can just sleep here. What the fuck? Someone else writes, I was catfished hard. I matched with a guy, and we chatted a full week before our date. I'm still undecided on whether this guy altered his pictures or used someone else's. He showed up in raggedy clothes and was missing half his teeth. He legit tried leading in for a kiss. I almost died. Ugh. See, that's the thing. Listen, some people are missing teeth due to circumstances that, I don't know. But, like, come on, people. No. Do not force yourself onto anyone, whether you have a full row of teeth or not. Now, oh my God, this is a nightmare. This is what nightmares are made of. The same person, poor thing. It's a series of unfortunate dating events with this one writer because she wrote in several stories, but these were my two faves. The one I just read and this one. I went on a date with a guy who could not and would not stop talking about sex. Ironically, I was totally down to fuck. But the more he kept on, it was just like, ugh. He asked if I wanted to come over and I said, sure. I think this may have surprised him. We go back to his apartment and it's a literal dump. Trash everywhere, smells like cigarettes, dirty sheets halfway off the bed, and asks, we doing this? I've never left someone's apartment faster. Okay, so this is disgusting. First of all, you weren't raised right. You were raised by fucking wolves. You should not be inviting guests over if your place is untidy. You shouldn't even be taking selfies in the mirror if your bedroom is untidy. Like, what part of cleaning for your guests do you people not understand? That is so fucking rude. Clean your sheets, make your fucking bed, put the shit in the dishwasher. And even if you don't have time to do all that, just be like, yo, give me a minute. Wait in the car. Let me make sure my place is decent. Blah, 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 blah. If you are bringing people up here and you're still getting pussy like that, bro, like, these girls are trash and so are you. There, I said it. Someone else wrote in saying, not a date, but I met up with this guy one time to hook up. I didn't have tents, so we got down at a park. So we find a spot. He's there giving me head. I'm standing trying to keep a lookout because the park wasn't that dark. It starts to rain and all of a sudden he's like, if I killed you here, nobody would find out. Bitch, who the fuck says that? Like, who the fuck says that? You know, a lot of y'all don't know what to say when, like, you're getting down and dirty. If you don't know what the fuck to say, the best policy is shut the fuck up and stay quiet. Sometimes I'm watching porn and I hear some of these, like, people getting fucked and they say the most whack shit ever. Like, you're fired. I lost my erection. Like, leave me alone. I'm turning this off. I'm putting my phone down. I'm going to sleep. Goodbye. Another listener writes in saying, so one day I was at Fat Tuesday by the beach and I met this football player. We won't be saying his name. So I gave him my number and we texted for a few. I was like, oh my God, I made it. He was cool at first, but we never really had hung out. So he tells me he wants to take me on a date. He tells me to be ready by 8. I'm dressed super cute. This man came and picked me up in a Lambo, getting the car, and he's wearing sweats, and I'm in heels and a dress. He's like, you're overdressed where we're going. So I'm like, what the fuck? So he took me to Walmart and told me I can have whatever I wanted. I told him, please take me home. Now that I think of it, I should have gotten 8 TVs. Bitch, I would have bought groceries for the whole fucking month. Really left him wondering. Someone else wrote in saying, so years ago, I was fairly new to South Florida, and I had met someone through an app. We'd agreed to meet and go on a date. So anyway, he kindly picks me up, even though I should have said not to pick me up, and he drives us to this restaurant, in which he says, by the way, I don't know if I told you this, but I'm only here for a work assignment. I'm leaving Miami in a few weeks. Normally, that wouldn't be a big deal, but he never mentioned it via text, and he implied that he was interested in a potential LTR, so whatever. I bypassed that, let it slide, and agreed to go in the restaurant. We sit down, I'm making conversation. This guy stops me mid-sentence to say, this is gonna sound douchey, but what was your name again? I tell my name. I still let him slide because he drove, so I would need a ride back home because this was before Uber and Lyft. Anyway, we left to walk around and hop on over to another restaurant where I just so happened to run into some coworkers. Back then, I wasn't out, so it was kind of a big deal. Oh my God, fucking nightmare. Anyway, homeboy was standing near the front door of this establishment, dancing all kinds of awkward. We hopped over to another restaurant where they were playing live music, and homeboy was clapping and dancing off beat. So anyway, me thinking that things would turn around at the end of the night, we leave back to my place. When we get there, he proceeds to let me know that he's exhausted and wanted to know if he could crash with me until the early morning. I said, sure. So there we are, in the bed, sleeping and everything. No sex. I mean, that part was probably a blessing. But yes, in the middle of a deep sleep, I wake up to this guy screaming, like running from a killer in a scary movie style. I couldn't fucking believe it. He was literally yelling at the top of his lungs with his eyes closed. And here I am trying to smooth things out. I'm just like rubbing his shoulder, whispering to him, shh, shh, shh. It's okay. It's okay. Hoping he would calm down and go back to sleep. Needless to say, the morning couldn't come quick enough so I could get the guy out of my house and never talk to him again. But yeah, that was probably one of the worst crazy dates I've ever had. Terrifying. Life-changing. I would never go on a date ever again after that experience. We've got two more stories, and these are quick. Someone else wrote in saying, a man told me we were going bowling, and he took me to his grandma's funeral. It was our first date. Never hung out with him again. Oh, hell no. But see, I've delivered y'all a series of horrific dating stories. But none have been as moving, disturbing, or chilling as this one. And it just so happens to be the shortest story that I have received. Are you guys ready for this? Golden Corral. So there you have it, everyone. We've heard some awful date stories. We learned that Leatherface could have been a trans icon, which is loved masturbating in orgies. No one is trying to poison our candy. And thanks to tuberculosis, we have vampires. Woo! Please, guys, this is all humor. Don't use any of this to write a college paper or anything like that. I'm hoping that you all will get to enjoy your Halloween a little more because you listen to this shit show. But again, thank you all so much for listening. I'm hoping you all enjoyed this. If you want, if this didn't spook you enough, you have last year's Halloween episode that you can listen to. It's called Ghosted, Ghosting Ghosts, and it's super spooky. It's spookier than this one. Like, I couldn't sleep. Like, a lot of people couldn't sleep. Like, it was paranormal activity as fuck. Leave a comment, write to me on Instagram, wherever the hell you are. Like, send me snail mail, pigeon mail, whatever. I don't care. I love when you people write to me. Or if you want to make a donation, I love that too. Anyway, take care of yourselves. Have a happy and safe Halloween. Bye.